Saram, dear listeners, and welcome to Vahini Satsang. As always, like in this program, we have Brother Sai Prakash joining me, the co-host of this series, where we have, with Bhagwan's inspiration, started to dwell on his writings. And the first series of articles that Bhagwan wrote for the Sanatana Sarathi is this sacred musings, which is Prema Vahini, the divine musings, which he so beautifully named as Prema Vahini. So we have done the first two chapters in the previous episodes of this program, and today, as we move on to the third chapter, by Bhagwan's grace, we also have a guest, a former student of Bhagwan's university, a very experienced alumnus of Sri Sathya Sai Institute of Higher Learning, a well-known figure and a beautiful instrument of Bhagwan in the composition of many lovely Sai Bhajans, Brother Sonam Gyamso from Sikkim. So he will also be part of this discussion today. So let's begin with the first paragraph of the third chapter of Prema Vahini. Like we do in every episode, we will listen to Bhagwan's words and then we will discuss our thoughts and our insights.
సాధనే జీవితమునకు మార్గము. మానవుడు ఎంత ఉత్తమ స్థితికి పోగలడో, ఈ నరదేహమునందు ఎంత శక్తి ఇమిడి ఉన్నదో చూపగల తెలుపగల మహాత్ములు నాడును నేడునూ కలరు. మనసు ఎల్లప్పుడూ బయటనే తిరుగుచుండుట, ఇతరులను విమర్శించుట, ఇట్టి వ్యాపారములయందే అది చాలా వ్యర్థమైపోతున్నది. ఇతరుల గుణదోషములను చూచుటలోనే నిమగ్నుడైన ఇంక ఏకాగ్రత ఎట్లు కుదురును?
Premavahini Chapter 3. There have been and there are great masters now too who demonstrate to man the great heights one can attain and also reveal the great power that is latent in the human body. Mind of man is often wasted wandering on things outside, criticizing others and similar such businesses. When one is always engaged in seeing faults in others, how can one attain ekagrata or one-pointedness?
So that is how Bhagwan begins the third chapter of Prema Vahini. So clearly Bhagwan is saying that there have been and there are great masters now too who demonstrate to man the great heights one can attain and reveal the great power that is latent in the human body. So you have no excuse to say that, you know, we cannot attain this. That happened in the times of Prahlada, that happened in the times of Dhruva, or that happened in the times of Mahatma Gandhi, and now it's not possible, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, there are two aspects to what Swami is saying. One is that, yes, there are such people, and possibly we may know them, we may not know them. That's on one hand. But on the other hand, he says, they are setting an example of how one can achieve one-pointedness. Basically, if you waste your mind in fault-finding and in looking outside, then you're wasting a precious instrument or a tool which can help you in getting one-pointedness.
Yes. So, amazing.
Yeah, talking about great masters.
Yes.
I had the great fortune to meet some of the greatest masters today.
Oh, beautiful.
And I'll just narrate one or two of these experiences. Way back in the fag end of the last century, then I was working for the government of Sikkim.
Oh, last century is just gone by.
Just gone by.
I was wondering, oh my God, are you that old?
We are not talking about in the prehistory.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Okay.
So what happened was, we had an occasion to invite Swami Chidananji Maharaj.
Okay.
So there is also a Divine Life Society in Sikkim, the Sikkim chapter of the Divine Life Society. And they had organized this program. And as a part of the Cultural Ministry of Cultural Affairs, I was also asked to host the program and help.
So, Divine Life Society is started by Swami Shivananda.
Swami Shivananda Maharaj.
Right.
And Swami Chidananda Maharaj is the pontiff, the chief pontiff of the organization of this ashram. So, he was almost around 100 years old.
Oh. Wow.
So, when he came, we organized a Purna Kumbham and we welcomed him so beautifully. Mm-hmm. So it was a huge hall and Swamiji was... he came and sat on the stage.
Mm-hmm.
And then all the organizers, they stood up and walked towards him with a flower to offer the flower to him and mm-hmm. touch his feet.
Mm-hmm.
So when my turn came, as I was touching his feet,
mm-hmm.
he looked at me and said, Sai Ram.
So nice.
Oh, wow.
Now, for me, it was so touching.
Mm.
And then after that, the experience that I had,
mm-hmm.
you know, if we talk about wish first from eternity and, you know, the mystical sound, mystical voice, and that day I heard one.
Oh.
When Swamiji, he was to give a talk,
mm-hmm.
and his entire talk was just, he said Krishna, Krishna, Krishna 3 times. And then there was nothing coming, forthcoming from him. He just kept silent after that.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
And the entire talk was just that.
Just that. But it mesmerized the whole audience, a whole hall packed with humanity,
mm.
people coming from all walks of life.
Mm.
And then people who were, you know, most of them, you hardly know whether they were spiritual in their outlook.
Mm-hmm.
But then he said, and it was just a whisper on the microphone, he said, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. Mm. And then after that, there was... real pin drop silence. And I had goosebumps. And I was in ecstasy.
Mm.
So, when you talk about masters, you know,
mm.
who have attained that stage, state in life,
mm.
You know, I have seen one such, I had this beautiful experience.
Mm.
And even here in Prashanti Nilayam, one day I was so beautifully, I was, you know, surprised to see a Buddhist monk here.
Okay.
That too, a Tibetan Buddhist monk, you know, because you can make out a Tibetan Buddhist monk from the color of the robe. It's
okay.
That red robe.
By the way, this is for the knowledge of the listeners. Brother Sonam has done his PhD on philosophy of Buddhism. Am I right?
Yeah, you're right.
Oh,
Tibetan Buddhism.
Tibetan Buddhism.
Yes.
And was it kind of, sorry to distract, but was it kind of focused on meditation or the entire concept of Buddhism, philosophy of Buddhism?
Yeah, we actually had to study the entire gamut of esoteric and exoteric traditions of Buddhism.
Okay.
But mine was more focused on the Tibetan Buddhism, the Tibetan type of Buddhism, which is esoteric Buddhism,
okay.
Tantric Buddhism.
Oh.
So when I saw one who belonged to the same kind, you know, who was belonged to the same clan and he was there seated amongst the people and he was a white,
mm-hmm.
white person.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to talk to him, but then our regulations don't really permit us to go and talk to anybody.
Right.
But I was those days living with my my grandmother,
mm-hmm.
who was also permanently staying in Puttaparthi. And at night before, when we were just preparing to go to sleep, he came, this gentleman, this Buddhist monk just entered the compound there behind East Prashanti, the annexes behind East Prashanti. And then he said, I heard that there is a Tibetan Buddhist here studying in this institute and I heard about you and I wanted to meet you.
Oh, nice.
Swami brought him, the very person whom I wanted to meet, he was there with me. And then I heard this beautiful narration from him. Now this narration, you know, speaks about two great personalities. One was this person, a novitiate.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other person, his guru.
Okay.
Who was at that point in time the chief pontiff of the Nyingmapa school of Buddhism.
Mm-hmm.
So his guru
mm-hmm.
was not well and quite aged
mm-hmm.
and about to pass away, like about to die.
Mm-hmm.
And we call attain Mahaparinirvan.
Correct.
And this young gentleman, he had been in a place called Bailakupe
mm-hmm.
in the outskirts of Mysore.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
You know, he had been, there is a Tibetan settlement there.
Right.
And there are so many monasteries and...
But one of the largest, right?
One of the largest
Tibetan
yeah, outside Tibet.
Yes.
So he had been undergoing, like he had been going through the Pragya Paramita Hriday Sutra. He had been studying for 12 years and he had come as a kid. Now he was 19. So for 12 long years he had been studying this scripture, the scripture. And then the purpose, I asked him, what was the purpose of, pursuing this type of education? He said, it's not education that I was looking at. I wanted a firm background for my spiritual progress. Mm-hmm. Now that I had a very scriptural, very strong background, now I am on my way to the Himalayas to become a Buddha.
Oh.
He said, I am going to become a Buddha. Mm-hmm. On my way to the Himalayas, I wanted to come to Puttaparthi because I was prompted by an inner urge to come to Puttaparthi, and I have been here for 1 month.
How beautiful.
Wow. Now what he revealed to me after that was fantastic, He was here in Puttaparthi for a whole month, and every day he sat for darshan. Swami came and gave darshan, and Swami went inside, took people for interview and never looked at him, never cast a look at him. And then he felt really dejected at the end of the month. So he just wanted to get away from this place. He thought that I have wasted one whole month. I could have been by the side of my guru. And then I could have had a last glimpse of my guru. So instead of that, I have wasted all my time here. So that day, he resolved that he would sit for the last darshan in the morning. And then he would go away from here. And on his onward journey to the Himalayas, whatever. What happened was, when he was sitting for darshan, and the darshan music started, and Swami came out, in place of Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba, he had the vision of his guru.
Wow.
His guru, His Holiness Dzogchen Rinpoche. I can openly tell the name itself, His Holiness Dzogchen Rinpoche, the highest potentate in the Nyingmapa tradition, in the entire Buddhist, Tibetan Buddhist tradition, a completely realized Buddha. He came out in place of Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba and walked among the flanks of devotees. And this gentleman, he was so excited, he got up and offered 3 long prostrations, full prostrations to Bhagwan, and no sevadars caught him. He was not caught by anyone.
That is a bigger miracle.
Yeah, that was a real miracle. And then after that, it was throughout the darshan, it was Dzogchen Rinpoche giving darshan, and Dzogchen Rinpoche walked back into the interview room.
Wow. What an experience.
So this was, and afterwards when Dzogchen Rinpoche really attained Mahaparinirvan, now what had happened was, his relics had to be given to different people, all his followers, So even from Sikkim, a delegation went to Nepal to get some relics or his clothes, his robe or some apparel, something that we could really cherish and keep in Sikkim. So when they went there, they saw that he had reduced his body to a foot long. Like it was just a foot.
Oh my God.
Yeah, because the devotees had been praying so hard that you should not vanish. Mm-hmm. They call it dissolving the entire corporal body into the rainbow body.
Oh.
So the body itself vanishes.
Mm.
So when the devotees prayed, the body was reduced to the size, to about 1 feet, 1 foot height. And then it was embalmed and it was kept inside a beautiful casket. And it was put on a pedestal.
Okay.
Now when these people went there, the day the body was put on the pedestal, from 4 corners of the pedestal, nectar started flowing.
Oh.
Amritam.
Wow.
And the salt that was used to embalm the body, the salt itself turned into ashes. So that was the moment I read this, great masters.
Great masters.
During our own times, we don't have to go back in time, go into Satya Yuga. There are masters.
No, but what leads to the great masters is what he says, is the power that is imminent in this human body.
Yes.
So he says the power that is imminent in this human body has been revealed to us by these masters. And in a way of speaking, he says, it is accessible to everybody.
Yeah.
We also have the same body.
Yeah.
We have the same mind.
Yes.
So he is again coming back to this point of one-pointedness. I think last Thursday when we discussed, the whole chapter, previous chapter was about concentration and one-pointedness.
Yes.
And what Swami revealed there is so beautiful because yes. it's like an evolution.
Yeah.
In the last session, Swami said that look at an animal, look at the lion, look at the crow, look at a cat. Do you see them having a steady vision? They're always looking this side. The lion is so powerful, the elephant is so powerful, but it's always looking this side, that side, this side, yeah. that side. There is no steadiness.
Yeah.
There is no one-pointedness.
Mm.
And Swami says, for anything that you want to achieve anything. Like now, you, for example, you are a singer, you are a musician. You need to calm yourself. You need to concentrate. You need to focus. And our every endeavor needs that one-pointedness.
Yes.
Then you can imagine how much of concentration is actually required. To achieve the ultimate.
Yeah.
Yes.
That yes. kind of, ekagrata that Swami says, one-pointedness. Yes. The beautiful point he said last time was, why is it that the animals are not having one-pointedness? He said, that is because they have a tendency to harm. Mm,
yes.
So when there's beautiful. A tendency to harm, there's fear.
A negative tendency.
Yeah.
yeah.
The moment, see, and it is hardwired in them. Like a tiger has to kill to eat. A lion has to kill to eat. So when that is its natural function, and yeah. when it kills and it eats, then it also has the fear.
Yeah.
Because it is causing fear in others, it has the fear in itself. Then now he has come, this Thursday we have come to human beings.
Yeah. yeah.
Last yeah. Thursday we were with animals.
Yeah.
And now we have come to this Thursday, we have come to the human beings. And he says, there is immense potential in the human being. Because you are not hardwired to kill. You know, you are not hardwired to do anything that can cause fear.
Yeah.
Anything. So, anything that is actually causing fear is not human.
Yeah.
It is not a human quality.
Yes.
So, he says, you are eligible to have that ekagrata, that one-pointedness.
Yes.
How do you do that? He says, the mind is always busy looking at others. The mind is always busy looking at who is getting the next interview.
Yeah.
I mean, when you're sitting for darshan, I don't want... how many people are looking at Swami?
Yeah,
like many people are counting, why is it that only that person is getting the interview again and again and again and again?
Yes.
So, yeah. the mind is always comparing, taking notes.
Yes.
But he says, in that way you're thinking only about others. You're not focused on yourself. You're not focused on... So that one-pointedness, he says, can be achieved.
Yeah, I had a beautiful... experience sitting right there in the, on the portico.
Okay.
You remember Mr. V.K. Narasimhan?
Yes.
So there was a time when he was the editor of Sanatan Sarthi,
right. Right.
and he was also one of the foremost journalists of this country. You know.
Absolutely.
So there was a negative thing written in a newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
It in fact made the second headline, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And Swami was about to get into his car and go to Vrindavan.
Mm-hmm.
And then this elderly gentleman, he hurried towards Bhagwan and showed the article to Swami.
Okay.
And said, Swami, somebody has written like this. Should I write a very strong rejoinder? And I'll never forget that moment, that look in Swami's eyes, that look of compassion and concern and care. Swami said, how old are you? And then Mr. Narasimhan said, Swami, I'm 78. Swami said, is it not time for you to sit and meditate?
Oh.
I'll never forget that moment. Swami said, go and do your japam, dhyanam, whatever you are doing. Do it intensely. There is no time to waste. Forget about this. People who write this, they also glorify me. People who write like this, they glorify me better. So don't bother about this. You do your sadhana. Like, that was Swami's focus, you know.
Wow.
All the time goading us and telling us that be focused.
Be focused.
In fact, that, naturally leads to what we are trying to do in Radio Sai as well.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
sitting right here in this very hall,
yeah.
when Swami came here in August 2002, when he inaugurated this place,
yeah.
Swami said, I have nothing to gain. from this kind of work. I have nothing to gain. Yeah. I don't even need it.
Yeah.
I don't even need it. I mean, we cannot compare Swami to any other ashram or any other holy man or anybody else.
No. Yeah.
But if you look at the trend of the so-called neo-spiritual ashrams, the first department is media. The first department is propagation.
Yeah.
And here Swami said, sitting in this very hall, I don't need any of this. If it is helping you, if you are getting refined, if you are getting better, if you are finding fulfillment, then you do it.
So beautiful.
It is like, that's why, I mean, whenever we are trying to do something, we are not doing it for Swami's sake.
Do it for your joy, for your enlightenment.
That's all.
Yeah. Yes.
That's all. If it's giving you that, you do it. I don't need anything.
Yeah.
If you're doing it in that spirit, you're never working.
Yeah, definitely.
Or you're working all the time.
Or you're working all the time. But working right. Joyfully.
I still remember in the mandir, Swami telling us so many times, but this one occasion, when Swami said, why do you sing bhajan? Mm-hmm. So we all said, Swami, somebody said, Swami, we want to please you. Mm-hmm. Swami said, I am already pleased. You don't have to please me further. Then Swami said, if it makes you happy, then sing bhajan. But if you are trying to prove something, don't sing bhajan.
Mm. Wow.
Then Swami said one most beautiful thing. First be a devotee, then be an artist.
Wow.
If you are an artist, you forget being a devotee.
Mm.
So very that important. Focus all the time, whether you are singing bhajan or meditating or anything.
Wow. Amazing. In fact, as we are ruminating on this first paragraph, you know, where Bhagavan is saying there are great masters. And the one thing that I also want to underline here, Swami is saying there is great power that is latent in the human body.
Yes.
Yes.
I think that is again something very, very significant,
yeah.
I feel. Because, you know, again, I had seen someone who was to me such a fantastic revelation. You know, we are also talking about how one pursues the path of non-violence, then one is fearless. And when one is fearless, then one has that ekagrata, one-pointed concentration. And if you see the life of Mahatma Gandhiji, he was someone who always strove to pursue the path of truth and non-violence. And I had the chance to meet the secretary of Mahatma Gandhiji, Mr. V. Kalyanam, who served Mahatma Gandhiji in the last 4 years of his earthly sojourn. And incidentally, today is January 26th, the Republic Day, and the Swami has arranged that perhaps, you know, think about the country and the great leaders that this country has produced and the great ideas that they set and the inspiration that they continue to give us.
Yeah.
So I remember calling this person, Kalyanam, and asking, you know, when can I see you? He said, oh, you want to see me? See, my visiting hours are 11:30 p.m. to 2:30 a.m. I said, are you sure? I was wondering, did I hear it right? I mean, is it a.m. or p.m.? He said, see, that is the only time I am free. But if you are free, we could meet at that time. I said, okay, but like, can I come during the day also sometime? He said, well, you can come, but I will be busy with my things. So, I mean, it's up to you. I cannot like sit down and talk to you, and because we wanted to actually record, because he was 91 at that point in time, historical figure. And he said, yeah, otherwise you can come at any time. I'll be busy with my things. You can hang around, but I cannot sit down and talk to you. And all that. So I went to Chennai, and I was, it was early in the morning. It was around 7 o'clock, and I'm climbing the staircase. He was in the first floor. And as I'm doing that, I see this old man in white and white, and he had this mop stick, and he was very diligently cleaning all the stairs.
At 91.
Yeah. So, I actually thought it is some sweeper or someone. I mean, at 7 o'clock in the morning, if someone is cleaning the staircase, taking a mop stick, you know, so I actually asked him, you know, where is Mr. Kalyanam's house? He said, I am Kalyanam. And I was like, oh my God. I said, why are you doing this? Sir, why? And that was like immediate thing. Why are you doing this? He said, I like it. I said, I mean, you like mopping and sweeping. Mm. Yeah, what is wrong with this? We have to be clean. I like to see everything clean.
Beautiful.
And it keeps me fit. What is wrong in this? This is a great work. In fact, he said, I have no problem in posting in my CV that I am the best sweeper you can find in the whole world.
Beautiful. Wow. Beautiful.
And you know what is the daily schedule? He gets up at 3:30 in the morning, and the first thing he does is he just puts on one towel and he cleans the entire street in front of his house. So 3:30 to 5, he cleans the entire street. Mm. Then he comes back to his room, rests for 10 minutes, then he takes the mop stick. So 6:30 to 8, it is a 6-story building, he will clean the staircase one by one. Perfect job. And then he will go up to his room, have his cup of tea or coffee. He'll come down. That building is the only building which has a beautiful garden in that entire area.
Wow.
So he will spend from 8:30 to 11:30 tending to the plants. 11:30 he'll go back to his room. Again, 10 minutes of rest. Then he'll go up to the staircase, to the terrace. On the terrace, he has his kitchen garden. So there he will spend time with his little tomatoes and his fresh spinach and his lady's fingers and everything. So till 1:30 he's busy looking after his family, his little tomatoes and radishes. He will come back picking a few vegetables. Mm-hmm. And he will eat only what he grows.
Only what he grows.
Only what he grows. Wow. So he will come back, then he would make his simple lunch, which is basically in the rice, he will just put all these vegetables and a copious serving of ghee. And he said, and you tell me, see, just taste, how beautiful it is, how tasty it is. And I said, yeah, of course, I mean, everything is pure there. You grow everything.
Very organic.
So much, yeah, absolutely organic. And then he will have that rice, and he will have a little curd rice, and then he will have... Just again 10-15 minutes of siesta. Then he will start cleaning up his own room. He has like two rooms. Mm. So he'll clean up the entire room. There should not be dust particle anywhere. Everything should be in its place.
Amazing.
And then at 3:34 he will have again his cup of tea or coffee. And then he has many engagements to, you know, to visit places, and he has an adopted village. 90% of his pension goes in serving the villagers there. He has a school there. So he would be out 4:30 to 6:37. He will come back, again prepare his own dinner. And then from 8:30 to 11:30, he's very keen about what is happening in the country. So he will read and he will watch television to keep himself abreast of everything that is happening in the country.
So much concern.
So much concern. Then at 11:30 to 2:30 is the only time he said he is free to do anything else or meet or talk anyone. So he doesn't sleep. His sleep is only these siestas that he takes, which I was a witness to actually. So he would, and he has his timings for it. You know, actually, even sometimes when we were recording, you know, when we came up, I told you just 5 minutes can we record something. You know, that's how we were recording something. So even as we are recording, when it is time for him, he will just go into siesta. He'll just give me 10 minutes. And he will just happily slip into his siesta.
Beautiful.
And after 10 minutes, exactly, he'll come back. Mm. And now he'll be fresh, as if he had like 4 hours of deep sleep, you know. He'll be fresh. And he said, see, siestas are very good, time effective. I can do so much work.
The potential of the body, mind.
Potential of the body. And see, he has not visited, he has not had the quote-unquote benefit of the modern medicine and modern technology, nothing. He has just used the God-given body so effectively, so fantastically. And whenever he has time, he will do Namasmarana. So Namasmarana is like how Gandhiji used to preach the unity of all religions. So he would write Hare Rama, Hare Krishna, he would write Jesus... save me. You will write all religions, Namasmarana. One diary he has.
Mm. How beautiful.
I just... you know, when you think about the power of the human body, and now perhaps he must be 94 now. But what alertness, what concern and what agility in that body.
Now, if you ask him, where does he have the time to criticize anybody?
Yeah.
So I'm saying all our time is wasted in finding faults with others. How can you find ekagrata, one-pointedness? So where is the time for him? I mean, he's so focused.
Yes. So focused. And I think that focus is what gives you all the energy to attain that virtue of ekagrata. In fact, as someone said, what is there around us, what is there in front of us, what is there behind us, and what is there beside us is nothing compared to what is there inside us.
And one more thing, you know, when we talk about ekagrata, a lot of people, many of us, we have a misnomer that, you know, ekagrata must be a segmented quantum of time, you know, wherein within this time I need to be focused. Mm-hmm. And the rest of the time, you know, you can do anything. So doing something with a very focused mind. So a student might read a book in a very focused way with total ekagrata and may not have that ekagrata elsewhere. But how beautifully Swami has been telling us about constant integrated awareness. No?
Right.
Yes.
That whole focus, you know, having focus all the time on whatever we do, do it with that focus. You are a yogi, Swami says.
Right.
Yoga, karmasu, kaushalam is that only?
Yes, correct. Absolutely. Wonderful. So let's move on to the next paragraph because I think that theme continues and probably we can, you know, extrapolate more as we listen to Bhagwan's words.
నా వంటి దేహం కలవారే వీరపురుషులు, నా వంటి దేహము కలవారే మహాపురుషులు. వారే ఇట్టి స్థితికి రాగలిగినప్పుడు నా స్థితి ఇట్లు ఎందుకుండవలెను? ఇతరుల లోపములను వెదకినచో నాకేమి లాభము? నా లోపములు నేనే వెదకి నాకు నేను మనసు స్వాధీనంలో పెట్టుకునవలెను అనే సంకల్పము స్థిరము చేసుకునుట మొదటి సాధన.
When many valorous and great ones who have physical bodies just like me have attained such exalted status, why should my position be anything less? What do I gain in finding faults of others? I have to search within myself for my own faults and keep my mind under control. Making this firm resolve is the first step in spiritual practice.
So here, before we move on to the discussion, I want to share one of the listeners' questions.
Okay.
So she has asked us two questions based on what Bhagwan has said in the second paragraph. So Bhagwan very clearly says that one has to search within themselves for their own faults and keep their mind under control. And this is the first step in spiritual practice, making the firm resolve to do this. So she has asked us, requesting to be anonymous, I feel that when we are judgmental and when we form opinions, many times negative opinions about people in our minds, it is also a subtle form of finding faults or weaknesses of others.
Okay.
But this is a natural part of the mind. This is how the mind generally works, naturally works.
Mm-hmm.
How do we go beyond it? This is her first question. And the second question is, I feel it is not wrong to correct your spouse or your family members since their actions indirectly affect you. Please share your views on how to go about this. So let's take the first question, where she's saying that it is natural for the mind to form opinions and especially see faults in others. It just happens the way our mind is. How do we go beyond it?
Yeah, I mean, what comes to my mind as you're just reading out is the attitude with which you kind of tell another person, like somebody is not doing something right. The attitude, like what is good and bad ultimately, if you see.
Yeah.
So if somebody is not doing something moral, that is not acceptable in society. In a family, somebody is not doing something illegal, that's not accepted in a society. But when somebody is doing something which is not spiritual, I mean, spiritual is, if you look at it, a absolutely essential part of you. It is you. I mean, the core of who you are. So any action, like in one of the discourses Swami said, good and bad. What is good and bad? He said, good is that which takes you closer to God. Bad is that which takes you away from God. So at various levels, we have defined what is good and bad. And if you are actually telling somebody, if there is somebody who is doing something wrong, and you feel that you can tell them that, you know, instead of this, why don't you do it like this? This may help you better in your life. I think absolutely there is nothing wrong in that. But, you know, if you find fault with them, like Swami says, if you are angry with somebody, there is anger in you.
Yes.
Yes.
That's why this whole story of... See, so it's all levels of evolution.
Yes.
I mean, at the level of duality, when you are having, you are living in this level of duality, the mind tends to find faults with others.
Yes. Yes.
This person is like that, this person is like this. But instead of focusing on that,
yes,
on the negative aspect of that person, if you focus on the positive aspect of, everybody has something positive.
Yes.
And if you focus on that positive aspect, I think that reflection reaction will start working on you.
Yes.
Like, I think there are so many beautiful instances where Swami says, you know, there was this incident where the hijackers were coming.
Yes.
And this gentleman was giving love to them.
Yes.
And how their whole attitude changed.
Phyllis Crystal's anecdote. Yeah.
So how the whole, if it can happen to a hijacker, can happen to anybody. I think anybody is below that level of
hijacking.
So it is our personal growth.
Yes.
Which we are here, ekagrata, that's what Swami is saying.
Yes.
If you are focused on our personal growth, the world around us changes.
Yes.
First, possibly our best friend's attitude changes towards us. Then possibly our family's attitude changes towards us. Then the community's attitude changes towards us. So, how focused are we?
Yes.
I think that's... Any other thoughts, sir?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, it's the motive also.
Exactly.
Yeah, the motive behind being judgmental.
Mm.
Like when I, there are only on two counts I can be judgmental. I can point out somebody's mistake. One could be a very negative thing. I just want to belittle that person and really show his weaknesses to everyone.
Okay.
The other one could be, I'm concerned about what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
Like somebody, is smoking cigarette, somebody doing something terribly wrong, and I want to point it out to him and tell him that this is where you are going wrong, and I am absolutely sure that I am not doing that mistake in the first place, and then I tell him that, look, you are not supposed to do this, it's not good for you. So this is purely driven by compassion. So if the motive is very altruistic, then being judgmental is very good.
Yeah, I mean, I would go one step beyond that.
Yeah.
In the sense that if you believe in what, in a certain set of principles, then you need not even say it.
Yeah, yeah.
Like if you believe that smoking is really bad for your health, for your growth as a human, as for your existence, life as a human being.
Yeah.
If you firmly believe in it and you follow it.
Yeah.
Then automatically people will look at you and follow.
Be the change yourself.
They will automatically, they will come on their own and ask, why are you not smoking? Like I had a similar experience.
Yeah.
Because some of my friends, you know, they were chain smokers.
Yeah.
And they came and asked me, like, why are you not smoking? Then I asked them, why are you smoking? So then they said, you know, they're looking for an answer. I said, there are only two reasons. One is, you want to get that kick. You want a kick from smoking. Another is that you want to be accepted in your friend circle.
Yeah.
These are the only two things.
Yes.
So then I said, I already have the kick. There is something which is very harmless. I mean, if you are addicted to smoking, I am addicted to something else.
Yeah. You are already on the high.
I am on the high all the time.
Yeah,
that particular thing on which I am high is not harmful to me. It is beneficial to me. That is point one. And second thing is, I feel that if I don't have any bad intentions, and if I don't have anything against anybody, automatically that company which I crave for, which I may want to, which I may like, will come to me automatically.
Yes.
I am not dependent on the company.
Yes.
If I set myself right, automatically the right people will come, the yes. right things will happen.
Yes.
And also, like, you know, reflection reaction is one aspect, and there is goodness in everything.
Exactly.
So, like that famous episode of seeing the dead dog when yes. Jesus Christ was walking past,
yes.
and everybody was like closing their nose and looking away, and he said, "Look at its teeth, how beautiful they are."
Yes.
It's just a dead dog. And so there is goodness in everything. There is goodness, it's your drishti. And in fact, yes. the last line of the previous chapter, Swami says,
yes.
it is the drishti.
Correct.
He says, it is your drishti. Yes. How you look at creation, yes. your creation responds back to you.
Responds back to you.
True.
So
amazing.
Yeah.
I think.
In fact,
are we close to.
I think.
Yeah,
please.
There is a beautiful story from the life of Buddha, you know.
Okay.
Mm.
Among the followers of, ardent followers of Buddha,
mm-hmm.
there happened to be, now this is purely in the Tibetan tradition,
okay.
there happened to be a dullard,
okay.
who could never understand anything that the Buddha, sitting there in the mango grove, he was teaching every day. Jetavan, he was sitting there every evening, he would give discourses,
mm-hmm.
and on morality and, you know, Shila Samadhi Pragya.
Mm.
This person wouldn't understand anything.
Mm.
And because of that, he was demoralized. He was feeling all the time bad. And a lot of people, many others, they would pick on him and say, this fool doesn't understand, you know. He just sits there and gapes at us, you know. Mm. So Ananda was very much perturbed by this.
Mm.
So moved by compassion, he approached Buddha and said, Master, our brother here doesn't seem to understand anything.
Mm.
He cannot retain anything in memory. He can't even understand what you are speaking. So he feels very low.
Mm.
Is there anything that we can do for him?
Mm-hmm.
And the master said, you think that way.
Mm.
You don't know the potential of this monk.
Mm.
I'll show you his potential.
Mm.
So he called the monk and said, from tomorrow you don't have to sit for my discourse and listen to my discourses. You don't need to do that. You are much higher than that.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
From tomorrow what you do is prepare the ground for my discourse, evening discourse.
Mm.
So you clean up the place, and I'll give you two maha mantras that you have to chant when you are cleaning. So in Tibetan, it's called Dulpang Timathak. Dulpang means all the dust go away, and let all the smell disappear. So you keep saying, dust go, smell disappear. Dust go, smell disappear, and keep cleaning the place. Once the whole place is neat and clean, you don't need to be seen anywhere. You don't even need to come here. You are already enlightened. So this went on for a whole month. So whole month he prepared the ground for the evening discourse. And then one day the master called him and said, now you have really promoted yourself to the next level.
Hmm.
Now you go to that small cave.
Hmm.
There was a cave. Go inside there and meditate for 1 month.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, Master, what do I really concentrate on?
Hmm.
He said, think that you are growing horn. A pair of horns on your head.
Hmm.
So think of that and you sit and meditate. Because he was, everyone called him, you are like a bull.
Mm-hmm.
You are like an idiot.
Uh-huh.
You don't understand anything, you know. You must be growing horns, you know.
Mm.
This was a taunt that he was hearing every day.
Every day.
So it was easy for him to really connect with that one.
Mm.
So he went inside, the retired inside the cave, and then he started concentrating on the horns that were growing on his head, you know.
Mm.
So after 3 months,
mm-hmm.
the master said, now it's time for him to emerge out of his meditation.
Mm-hmm.
So he called him by his name and said, brother, you can come now. From there, his feeble voice, you know, was heard by everyone. He said, I can't come out because my horns are really touching the ceiling and I'm unable to extricate myself out of the cave, doors of the cave, you know.
Oh,
so I have to first do something about this, how to come out. He's obstructing me. So the Buddha said, okay, never mind, don't come out. Sit there and from today onwards, you think that your horns are growing, becoming shorter.
Oh.
And then once the horns disappear, you come out.
Ah.
And I'll give you the next level lesson.
Hmm.
So for 1 month, he sat there. And then he reduced his so-called horn, and came out, and then Lord Buddha told Ananda, see his potential.
Wow.
He can grow into anything. The potential is all the time there, you were born with it, and it doesn't go anywhere.
And this is a beautiful illustration of the power of the human body and ekagrata.
And the mind.
Exactly. When we say the human body, I mean, it is the whole psychosomatic apparatus. It is the mind, basically.
Yeah, the mind, basically.
In fact, in chapter 1, Swami said,
yes,
imagination, uha.
Yes.
He used the word uha, imagination. He says, you are born with a certain set of imaginations and swabhava, that is nature. But there is potential for you to grow out of it.
Yes.
If you have the right imagination.
Yeah.
With right imagination, has not Angulimala transformed himself?
Oh, my God.
Has not Ratnakara transformed himself into Valmiki?
Yes.
That's what Swami told in the first chapter. And this is a beautiful story.
In fact, as you are narrating this Buddha story, I'm just reminded of another Buddha story where as the master is proceeding, with his group of disciples, he settles down in one place. And then he asks this particular disciple to go and fetch water in a container. So this disciple goes, and it just happens that, you know, as he's trying to pick up the water, suddenly a bull enters. Again, a bull story. Bull enters into that lake, and the water becomes muddy. Okay, so he says, oh my God, wrong timing now. Now, how do I take this water for the master? Because the water has become so dirty. But nevertheless, he didn't want to go empty-handed. So he just took some water and he went to the master. And he said, Master, I'm very sorry because, you know, this water is not as clean as I would want to offer you. The master said, doesn't matter. You just sit down, no problem. And so the container was kept there and, you know, the master continued his discourse and after half an hour, the master says, you go now and get water. So he returns to the lake and he sees that, you know, the muddiness in the water has reduced a bit, but it is still very dirty. And he says, what do I take for the master, you know? So again, he takes some water, but is very dissatisfied. He goes back to the master and master says, it doesn't matter, no problem, you sit down. And after some more time, maybe an hour or so, master says, go and get water. And he's like, why does master send me again and again to get the water is never proper. And so finally, by this time, the mud has settled. So the water is very clear. And he gets that water and he offers it to the master. And the master says, do you know why I asked you to do this? He says, no, master, you wanted to take water. And I'm sorry that, you know, I could not really... It took so much time, it was wrong timing, I could not give you the pure water. You have to send me so many times. The master said, no, that is not what I want to tell you. Your mind is like this.
Beautiful.
What did you do? What did we do for the mud to settle down? Nothing. That is what you have to do. Nothing. Just let it be. What did we do? We just let the water be. Just let it be. Let your mind just be. Then it will settle down. And once it settles down, then it's pure. Then it's amazing.
Beautiful.
In fact, when I think about the solution for this devotee's question, she says it's very natural for the mind to find faults in others and all that. Okay, one discussion we had where we are saying, okay, being judgmental and thinking this is right and wrong is, you know, that is perhaps again something to be discussed, you know, what is right and what is wrong. But okay, in the natural normal course of things, we see something and, you know, we judge, we tend to judge. And of course, Mother Teresa so beautifully says, if you judge, you have no time to love people. But even if we keep that aside, when I think about it, I feel it is very wrong for us to say that it is very natural for the mind to do this. It is not the natural thing of the mind. It is actually the unnatural thing of the mind. What is the natural state of the mind? Where the mind is in connect with the Atma, where the mind is actually still.
Yeah.
And because that is when you can unlock the potential of the mind. That is one aspect. And I feel, yes, but as we work in our regular course of things, yet as Bhagavan used to so many times say, the mind is a mad monkey. The mind is not only a mad monkey, mind is a drunken mad monkey which is bitten by a scorpion. I mean, that is how it is. I mean, let's face it, that's how our mind many times is. So how do we deal with it? So I feel Buddha has given this very beautiful answer where he said, just let it be. Where, you know, they say that don't make promises when you are very happy. Don't take decisions when you are very sad. And don't react when you are angry. I think what we have to do is, you know, whenever we have these situations where, you know, we feel we are just following the course of the mind, we are not able to control the mind, it's perhaps just give it time, still yourself first, because anything you do at that point in time is not going to be the right thing to do. Something might have happened and, you know, you are agitated about it and you immediately react, you have lost an opportunity to handle the situation properly.
Yes.
And or suddenly you are very happy and you make these promises like young lovers do. And then suddenly after 6 months you feel, oh my God, what did I say? And that one person constantly thinks, she said me this or he said me this. And you know, in that point in time you said something, you know.
Yeah.
But if you have been careful, then probably you would not have landed in a situation like that.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
And there's another concept I just wanted to share, because again this is something which I heard and I felt was which can help. Many times, you know, this is how we evaluate the world. There's a concept called event and a story. So what happens basically, a particular event happens. Say, say the wife was expecting the husband to call her at 8:30. And the husband did not call, you know. And so the wife was waiting and, you know, and it's already like 9 o'clock, 9:30, and you know, then you feel, what is this? You know, he never thinks about what I have asked for. He's busy with his own things. You know, he never worries about. I a whole day I spend looking after the family and looking after the house. I ask him to do one thing, and he forgets and all that. And so the husband finally comes home at like 10:30, and he talks as if, you know, nothing has happened. Everything is normal, and you know, and so. So the wife feels, so this is how he is. You know, he doesn't even realize that he's not done this. You know?
Maybe she would have just removed the salt from the rasam.
So
this is what he deserves.
So what I'm trying to tell you is, so first an event happened and she created the story that this guy always doesn't care about me.
Mm.
By 10:30, by the time he comes, she doesn't want to talk to him. Because, you know, she's just really frustrated. So, and then she reinforces this idea, creates another story that he has always been like that, and he will pretend like now he's acting, you know, he pretends that everything is normal when he has done this, you know. And then so what will happen, suppose the next morning the wife is very upset, so she will probably not get up in time, the husband has to go perhaps to the office, so he will get up early and he will go, and the wife will see that's how he is, he doesn't even ask, you know.
When he leaves the
yeah when he home. Leaves, I mean, he's absolutely unconcerned with anything that is happening in my life. Why should I spend my time with this guy, you know? All this. So again, one more story you have built. So what happens many times, there is an event and we go on building our stories to it.
Yeah, but, I think.
But actually what would have happened is, perhaps the husband felt that, you know, whatever problem for which he would have called, maybe the problem automatically got solved. Or maybe he thought it's best to postpone it. Or maybe he did it but he didn't have time to say. Or maybe he had got an urgent meeting in office, so he attended.
Or maybe his mobile charge went off. Mobile charge
went off. As simple as that.
Yeah. So, you know, because we were so agitated, you know, we didn't even, so you didn't even think that it's, you know, he's worth even talking to when he came back.
Right.
So, you know, we created all these negative stories. But I think most of the time, whenever these misunderstandings happen, it's all because we create this. It's not as if that the other person does not love you, or it's not as if the father doesn't want to look after the child, or it's not as if this friend is unconcerned about you. Something would have happened. I'm coming this way and my friend was coming and, you know, he's passing by me and he didn't look at me here. What is this? Then we start building a story.
See,
adding imagination.
Ah, so
the other aspect to the second question which was asked.
Yes.
Like when family members, you know, we'll have to correct eventually somebody is not doing things right. I think it is our duty. Like if the mother's duty is to correct the child,
correct.
The mother has to do her duty.
Yes.
Absolutely to the best of her ability.
Correct.
And she has to do her best and say this is the duty. But all mothers are good. All mothers have given the right guidance to their children. But yes. Then how do children suddenly become what they are? Or how do bad people come? Because there is an innate nature in each one which has blossomed out like that. So then, you know, at certain point there comes a sense of detachment. So you say, I have done my best.
Yes.
So when even if you are telling your son or you are telling your daughter or you are telling your husband or you are telling your wife or you are telling your uncle, grandparents, whatever, you do it to the best of your ability and then leave the rest to the Lord.
Yes.
Because ultimately nobody has control over another person.
Yeah.
Yes.
You
absolutely
cannot control the other person completely. It's not possible. Only love can bind.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Only love can bind.
Bind. Absolutely. Nothing. In fact,
can I just add a twist to this Vishu, what you are telling? This beautiful imagery, you know, a very positive twist to it. The husband and wife, they go haywire completely. Then they keep building so many imaginations, very negatively. They go against each other. And ultimately, they come to a point of, you know, thinking about divorce, very sincerely. Then it's their anniversary. And they say that for the last time, let's list out whatever mistakes we have committed. So you write down your part, I'll write down my part. Or I'll write yours, you write mine. So what are the mistakes that I have committed? You write it down. So the wife says, millions of mistakes you have committed.
I can't even write it.
You can't, yeah. I'll write down. So she tears, you know, a page from her book and starts vigorously writing. Husband says, what about you? You have committed so many mistakes. I'm also going to list out. So he also starts writing, and both of them, the husband keeps looking at her and then tears out another page and vigorously writes. Wife says, what about, no, I am not going to leave this guy just so easily. She also tears open a page and then writes. Then ultimately the whole thing becomes so bulky. Then the husband says, should we look at each other's faults now? Let us see. So the husband says, okay, you look at yours. These are the mistakes that you have committed in your life. The wife says, first look at mine. I'll show you mine. So he takes the sheaves of papers from this lady, from the wife, and then keeps reading so many mistakes she has listed out, how she ignored her and how he didn't really bother about her or care about her, you know. Then he says, okay, take mine. And all that he has written is, I love you, I love you, I love you. Throughout all those pages filled with I love you, and she says, you give me back mine. So she says, why should I give it back to you? There are beautiful love epistles you have written to me. She says, no, please give it back to me. She comes down to that. Please, I have made a mistake. Now, it's a mistake. Okay, I accept that I am madly in love with you. So they both reconcile. Now, this was a beautiful twist to it. I read it somewhere. And it really adds to it that, you know, it all depends upon
what you see in the other person.
What you see in the other person.
Right.
And your perspective. If the perspective is only love, which you mentioned just now, then love overrides everything.
Yes. In fact, what we wanted is perhaps Swanam sir should share some real-life anecdotes of where you have seen this beautiful transformation in people. I don't know, we don't have much time, but in brief, if you can just share one anecdote, because you have spent so much time working with many teenagers.
I can just narrate one of these, one of my experiences. There was a youngster who was very, he had become very incorrigible at home. Parents couldn't control him. And the most important thing was, one of the reasons, you know, that used to really make him so cheesed off was his father every day telling him, come on, now it's time for you to wake up. Now get up, now you have to go, you know. So he used to feel that he was being driven very hard by his father. So he was terribly against his father, and he was brought up in the U.S. He was, in fact, at the age of 4, he was brought back to his country, and then he found himself completely like an alien in a new place. He didn't know the whole the situation, the environment. Everything was new to him, so he got into addiction. Substance abuse, and you know, so he was a youngster, And one day I was with them. In fact, when he asked his father to give him 5,000 rupees. Every day his father had to give him 5,000, 3,000, 5,000 for his daily expenses.
Oh my God.
So that day the father said, look, I can't shell out so much money every day. He just took hold of the television and broke it right in front of me. He just dashed it on the, dashed it on the ground. And he said that, look, you don't care about me, I don't care for you. So I was completely, concerned about this family because they were very close to me, but I was concerned about this boy. So we had to enact, because he was beyond redemption almost. No one could tell him anything. He wouldn't listen to anyone. Oh, don't try to preach, okay? Mm. What did you do when you were a teenager? He would ask you straight on your face. Right. So we enacted a drama. We sought the cooperation of the parents. And then I told them, you do the vanishing act. Let us see how this guy behaves when you are not here. Mm. Let me see when, whether he can still swagger around when you are not around, So the father went off to a foreign country. Because he was a very big development consultant. He got a very big job. He went away. And the mother did the vanishing act one evening. And then all of a sudden, frantically, this boy called me. Because I was the closest to that family. Mm-hmm. So he called me and said, you won't believe me. This is what my parents have done. I used to tell you that they don't love me. Mm-hmm. That okay. And the only son. Mm-hmm. And then my mother has just suddenly vanished. She didn't come home. When I came back from school, she's not there to, receive me. Mm. Then I said, maybe because of your attitude, she must have got fed up and she must have gone. Because many times she told me that she wanted to take up sannyas. Mm. Because she was fed up of this life itself. And I don't know. I hope, let us pray, nothing untoward has happened to her. Mm. So he said, what should happen? Nothing will happen. She has no heart. And this, that, Mm. Then I kept it on for 3 days. That evening, he called me. I went to his house at midnight. I told him, okay, what do you want me to do? He said, should we go to the police? He said, no police business. My mother somewhere, she must be hiding somewhere. Let's go to the temple where normally she goes. That is her normal haunt, let's go there. So we went to the temple at midnight, just beating around the bush. We came back. And then for 3 days, there was no sign of the mother. And then this boy broke down.
Oh, God.
Then he called me home. Hmm. Then I went to him and said, the choice is yours. I can't come to your place every day, when you call me. So what do you want? Say, I want my mother. Hmm. Then I said, you never wanted your mother. You used to, curse her and, give her names and call her names. You never wanted her. No. I know that I can't live without my mother. I want my mother. So now the short of it is, then the mother and we somehow saw to it that the mother met him, and in a shopping, in a mall, they met together, and it was a fantastic reunion of mother and son. And then after that, now today this boy, he is pursuing his PhD. Mm. He is in the US. Wow. And he has married a beautiful girl, and then he has 2 children. And then he's pursuing and he's working. He has become such a wonderful, responsible citizen of the country, Such a wonderful human being. When all that, because of a very well-meaning intervention, wherein I felt nothing but compassion. Mm. Yes. I was not being judgmental about this boy. 100% I meant the best for him.
Right.
It was all the time prayer. Every act of mine was like a prayer. And I have done this so many times in my life, and I have seen that I have experienced 100% success.
Beautiful.
Wow. In fact, as I think about it also, there are 3 perhaps solutions that come to my mind. First thing is which both of you echoed is that prayer. I think there is no shortcut, and we really most of the time do not even know the value of it. I mean, what it can do. So definitely prayer is the most amazing solution. And the other thing which Sai Prakash also mentioned is that positive motivation. I think there is something good in everyone. And once, I think if Swami loved all of us, if Swami gave us even a little, it was only because he saw the good in us that, he allowed us to hang around. And even now if he blesses us, because he sees only the good in us. So I think if we can see the good in the other person and encourage it, I think that is one way. And the other thing also which Sai Prakash mentioned is that persuasion with love. I think persuasion, prayer, persuasion with love. and positive motivation. Something will work.
Definitely.
Yes, wonderful. Well, I think the time is running out, so we have to close this session. We've just done the first two paragraphs, and I don't know if you have done really full justice to what Bhagwan has.
No, we have not. There are a few more points in the second paragraph.
Yeah, but I think there is something to think about. And dear listeners, all of you who are listening to this, please do share your views and thoughts. And if you have any queries, please do write to us. Our email is listener@radiosai.org. It's really wonderful when it becomes interactive, when you share your thoughts and, you know, your impressions and your questions, and it gives us also time motivation, and also it makes us think, because you are we live in this beautiful world of Prashant Nilam, but you live in a world where there are a lot more challenges than the challenges that we face in Prashant Nilam, and it's nice working together, trying to understand Bhagwan's teachings and applying that in our real day-to-day problems and issues. Thank you so much for being such a beautiful partner in this journey of understanding Bhagwan's messages. So with prayers to Bhagwan and with gratitude to him for allowing us this beautiful opportunity to ruminate on his teachings and seeking his strength, grace and guidance to walk on this beautiful path towards ultimate happiness, we bring this day-long test alive to a beautiful end. Thank you so much. Sayonara.